Does anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? Yes, Abhay. So intelligent. And he was so well educated. And Krishna wanted to give him the last ultimate education. And that education was on Prema Bhakti. And to understand the last limits of Prema Bhakti, you have to study in Vrindavan. So Krishna sent Uddhava to hear from the great professors of Prema Bhakti. And that was the Brijbasis, especially from the gopis, the Brajagopikas. Not exactly to hear. Gora, Gora, Gora. What do you have there? Where did this come from? When did you arrive?
3 days ago. I didn't even know you were here. Singing to
him. You've been singing? There are so many different levels of love, naturally. And even the residents of Vrindavan who love Krishna in a special way, in the most special way, in the most intimate way, there are different levels of their love for Krishna. And the topmost level of love for Krishna is the Brajagopikas. And of course we know that Srimati Radharani, being Krishna's Ladini Shakti, his internal energy, she is the full possessor of love for Krishna. So we're going to continue hearing about Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan. And he comes, in the first part of the chapter, Krishna tells Uddhava about the residents of Vrindavan. Because one reason the Acharyas explain is that Krishna is always missing, feeling great separation from the residents of Vrindavan, because it is love that captivates us. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything that we have, He possesses in full. So if this tendency to be captivated by love is within each and every living entity, because love makes one trustworthy too. Because we don't reveal our hearts and minds to someone who we can't trust, because it will be misused. So when someone loves us, or we perceive that they love us, then naturally we can open up our hearts to them completely. So love and trust are very intimately connected. So Krishna, being completely captivated by the love of the residents of Vrindavan, when he was in Mathura, he had no one to speak about, no one to speak to about the love about the people of Vrindavan. And therefore, he sent Uddhava to learn about this highest limit of love, especially the love of the Brajagopikas. So first, in the first part of the chapter, Uddhava hears from Krishna himself about his mission in going back to Vrindavan. And that mission was to console the residents of Vrindavan, because Krishna left earlier. Which chapter did Krishna leave Vrindavan? Which did he actually leave Vrindavan in the 10th canto? Does anyone know the chapter number? No, 44 is when Krishna kills Kamsa. 45, that's after 44. So that's when Krishna goes to the Gurukula, Sandipani Munis. But then the residents, Nanda Maharaj, returns back to Vrindavan in 45. But in chapter 38, Akura comes to Vrindavan and he falls down in the dust of Vrindavan. In the dust marked with Krishna's footprints, because that is the speciality of the dust of Vrindavan. It is marked with the footprints of Krishna, and all the residents of Vrindavan, They would respect even the animals. They would respect Krishna's footprints, and they wouldn't step over them. They wouldn't brush them aside, because the footprints of Krishna, we could say, just like if you see someone's shoes that you know, they remind you of that person. So we could say that the footprints of Krishna reminded the residents of Vrindavan of Krishna, but it is more than that too. The footprints of Krishna in the dust of Vrindavan are actually no different from Krishna. So when Uddhava saw when Akura saw these, the footprints of Krishna marked in the dust of Vrindavan, and this was in chapter 38, he rolled in those footprints and became ecstatic. And then 39, and it's important at the end of this chapter, this point will come up. Akura, after speaking to Krishna and Balaram and telling about his mission on behalf of Kamsa to bring Krishna back to bring Krishna to Mathura so Kamsa could make his attempt to kill him. And what did Krishna and Balaram do when Akura told Krishna and Balaram about his mission, that he was coming, he was bringing them, and the whole festival of the wrestling match had been arranged and organized just as a pretext to entice Krishna to come so that either the elephant or the wrestlers or something or another would kill Krishna. So what did Krishna and Balaram do when they heard of Kamsa's plan to kill them? Well, not quite their heads off, because... but they did laugh. They laughed really aloud and a lot. Because, of course, they thought it was a ridiculous plan. So that was in chapter 37. And then in 38... the cowherd men left for the great wrestling festival in Mathura, and Krishna and Balaram mounted the chariot. This is chapter 39, mounted the chariot of Akura. And the most wonderful prayers, which aren't exactly prayers of the gopis of Vrindavan, are described. They were the most intimate type of prayers, with no beseeching, no please give us this, please do this, no glorification of Krishna, practically speaking. They were just amazed. They were just begging Krishna. They were trying to stop, somehow or another, stop Krishna from leaving. They were amazed that the elder members of the cowherd community, Nanda Yasoda, that they were allowing Krishna to leave. The nature of the gopis' love for Krishna was that the blinking of their eyes would cause them the greatest anxiety. Just imagine, this is called Kamutya Nyaya. Just imagine, of course we can't imagine what the consciousness, the pure consciousness of the residents of Vrindavan and the gopis, we can't imagine what it's like, because our consciousness is material, and material consciousness is like a zero. And if you put so many zeros together, you only end up with zero. You can never reach the spiritual realm just by imagining with our material consciousness. Yet, with our consciousness, material consciousness, we can think if it is like this. Well, just imagine what it, if it seems like this, and this is what it seems like with material consciousness, just imagine what their love was like. It must be a million, a billion, a trillion, a quadrillion, more than what I'm thinking. Of course, it's incalculably more. But just imagine what it's like. What the kind of love the residents of Vrindavan had, especially the gopis, had for Krishna, and that the blinking of their eye would cause them incredible anxiety, because for that moment they were unable to see Krishna. Just imagine the intensity of love that would have to be in the consciousness, in your consciousness, in my consciousness, that we actually missed someone to that degree, that the blinking of our eye would cause us tremendous anxiety and would appear to be infinitely long in length, the blinking of the eye. And therefore the gopis in the 31st chapter in the Gopi Gita, they curse Brahma, not curse him, but they criticize him for giving eyes that blink, when the purpose of the eyes, akshanvantam phalamidam na param vidama, was to see Krishna. And after giving eyes, making them so imperfect that they blink. So just imagine the consciousness of the residents of Vrindavan, of the Prajagopikas, how much they love Krishna. And it is love for Krishna, not knowing Krishna, not philosophizing about Krishna, but it is love for Krishna that is the purpose of what we are doing. Love for Krishna manifesting in seva or service for Krishna, and that is called bhakti. And it is by the process of bhakti, by the process of doing something for Krishna's pleasure, because we are in this world continuously and only doing things for me. I mean, not that everyone else is doing things for me. It is me who is doing things for me. I'm the center of this illusory universe. So in the spiritual world, whatever the residents of Vrindavan are doing, whatever it externally appears like they're doing, sometimes they're dressing themselves, the gopis are looking in the mirror, they're combing their hair, they're decorating themselves. But it doesn't make a difference what it appears that they're doing, because it's the spiritual world, because it's Vrindavan. The purpose of what they're doing is to please Krishna. And in this world, for anyone who has a false ego, it doesn't make a difference what it appears that they're doing. The purpose is just selfish. Good sneeze, very timely. It is just to please me. And this is called Maya, because pleasing me, attempting to please me, never actually pleases me at all. Because me, who am I? I am Krishna's. So only when I am awake to who I actually am in that loving relationship with Krishna do I actually become pleased and satisfied. So the perfection of this is the residence of Vrindavan. So in the 39th chapter, the gopis were just so overwhelmed when Krishna was leaving with the Kura. They were so overwhelmed with love for Krishna, all they could do was cry out. They were praying. Yes, they were praying for the demigods to create some disaster. And they tried to stop Krishna. And practically speaking, and the point comes up even in the verses that Krishna spoke to Uddhava, is that when Krishna did drive the chariot, Akura drove the chariot, they would have died immediately, because they had already given their life airs, their very self was resting within Krishna. Their whole consciousness was only in Krishna. Krishna bhakti, bhakti rasato bhavato mati. They were Krishna conscious. They were only conscious of Krishna. This is love for Krishna. They were only conscious of Krishna. And everything else was in relationship to Krishna. So what kept them alive was that Krishna had, through messengers, premnai ayase iti dhotikai, that Krishna had sent a message to them saying, as he was leaving on the chariot of Akura, he sent a message saying, I'm coming back soon. I'm coming back soon. And therefore it was that that kept the gopis alive. So when Uddhava came, and this is in chapter 46 of the 10th canto, just right after, practically speaking, Krishna has killed Kamsa. Krishna sends Uddhava back to Vrindavan to console the residents of Vrindavan. And Uddhava has specific qualifications that allow him to do that. He's so intelligent. He's Krishna's friend. He's very intimate with Krishna. And he looks just like Krishna too. And he's even wearing the yellow cloth that Krishna wears. He is Krishna's... What is his relationship with Krishna? Huh? Cousin brother, okay. But what is that relationship? Through whom?
The son of Vasudeva's brother.
Yes, he was the son of Vasudeva's brother whose name was Devabhaga. Vasudeva had a brother named Devabhaga and he was his son. And Krishna, and he was a great, great devotee of Krishna. He looked like Krishna. He was so intelligent. And Krishna considered him his friend. Naturally, and he loved Krishna so much, but he loved Krishna. He was the best of the Yadu dynasty, but he loved Krishna on the level of the Yadus and Vrishnis, who thought themselves the topmost fortunate persons because Krishna was their relative. And naturally, it's natural to love one's family members. Even though in Kali Yuga everything is so crazy that it doesn't quite work like that. But it's completely natural. And in Kali Yuga everyone is missing that kind of natural love that makes them in a secure and proper way able to love Krishna in a natural, simple way. So the first part of the 46th chapter, Krishna sends Uddhava, and then Uddhava arrives in Vrindavan and he sees the uppercut Vrindavan. What does uppercut Vrindavan mean? The unmanifest to our vision. But he sees Vrindavan, that's what? What part of Vrindavan does he see when Uddhava first comes? Yes, blossoming, beautiful Vrindavan. That means he sees Vrindavan with Krishna actually there. And Vrindavan is blooming and blossoming and every living entity is in ecstasy just thinking about Krishna. And then that uppercut or unmanifest to ordinary vision, Vrindavan withdraws and he enters the Vrindavan where Krishna has left. See, these both go on simultaneously. Prakat and uprakat. Manifest and unmanifest. There is a Vrindavan where the residents of Vrindavan are feeling separation from Krishna. Prakat. And then, by the virtue of their feelings of separation from Krishna, they can't think of anything but Krishna. And the madness of their ecstasy and the stunness of their ecstasy and they get full access to associating with Krishna in the prakat, the uppercut, unmanifested Vrindavan. So in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it was perhaps Jiva Goswami who explained there are three different types of living entities in Vrindavan. Those who had anxiety and enthusiasm, those who were indiscriminate, and those who were trusting. And out of those three, while Krishna was in Mathura, two of those were able to always experience Krishna as if he was there. And one, due to their feeling separation from him, and one, the anxiety enthusiastic, which meant the gopis and the parents of Krishna, they couldn't experience Krishna but were merged into an ocean of ecstatic separation from Krishna, of madness, and their ecstasy was on the highest level. So when Uddhava came, first he saw this uppercut, unmanifest Vrindavan, where Krishna is, there's no separation from Krishna and everyone is ecstatic. And then he went to the home of Nanda and Yasoda, and he saw, and Nanda Maharaj was able to somehow greet Uddhava. He controlled himself and was able to greet Uddhava and speak to Uddhava about Krishna, and does Krishna even remember us? It's very, very heart-touching, the questions that he asked. And then he was remembering Krishna. But so he was able to control himself to some degree due to his gravity. But Mother Yasoda couldn't say anything. She couldn't say anything. She couldn't greet Uddhava because she was simply, what? Crying. With milk pouring from her breasts in motherly affection. She just cried. This was the nature of the ecstasy that she was feeling. So Nanda Maharaj spoke and saying, why can't Krishna protected us so many times? Can't he come and protect us from this fire of separation that we're all burning within? But in that, of course, he's experiencing Krishna, but in a level that perhaps we shall speak about towards the end, on a very, very high level, the highest level which is accessible to ultimately to the parents of Krishna, and ultimately the highest level accessible only to the Vraja Gopis, that highest level of Mahabhava. So then Uddhava sees Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda in so much ecstasy, but burning, brightly burning separation, varaha bhav. And he knows that it is his duty to console them, to cool them down, because that's what Krishna had asked him to do. So, there are 14 verses where Uddhava speaks to Nanda and Yasoda, and he's trying to cool them down. Cool down in one sense, because he sees that they're not going to live very much longer. Just imagine the kind of ecstasy or love that they have, that they cannot live. I cannot live without you. One can say that. But how rare that kind of affection and love actually is in this world. There's the stories of Romeo and Juliet, and this person who, when his lover dies or leaves them, they kill themselves. Or something like that. But whatever it appears to be like in this world, it's always self-centered. And usually when the lover leaves the person, rather than him killing himself, he usually kills the other person nowadays. I mean, it's upside down. Everything is upside down, especially in Kali Yuga. So Uddhava, to save the lives of Nanda and Yasoda, He wants to cool down their love. So there's three sections of his prayers. They're from text 30 to 43. How many verses is that? Without getting up, 14. Huh? 14. Very good. And the first four verses, he's going to glorify Krishna, and how wonderful Krishna is. And then through that he's going to glorify the fortune of Nanda and Yasoda. Because if Krishna is so wonderful and thinking about Krishna is so wonderful, how wonderful and fortunate is the consciousness of Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj were fully absorbed in thinking about Krishna naturally out of love. So that's the first four verses. Then three verses, he says, don't worry, you'll see Krishna soon. He's coming back, don't worry. And for them, who's a moment separation from Krishna is intense agony and is experienced as hundreds of years of separation. So a promise, oh, he's going to be back soon, means nothing. They don't want a promise, they don't want words, they want Krishna and they want him there now, otherwise how will they live? So at that point, after seeing that his words don't truly console them because the level of their prem is high, so high that all they can think about is, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is our beloved son? So then he tries a different strategy. And that other strategy is from 37 to 43, those verses. He talks philosophy, tries to bring up their philosophical understanding who Krishna is, so that will, for us, if we bring up our philosophical understanding who Krishna is and actually understand and actually believe and trust that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that will be very elevating. But for the father of Krishna, philosophy will bring their consciousness down, which is just what Uddhava wants to do, because the heat of their love for him is burning their life. So if he can turn the heat down with philosophy and make them understand that he's actually the super soul and universes come from his skin holes. You can't love someone whose universes are coming from their skin holes. Not in the same way you can love him. He's your boy, your baby. You love him so much, but as soon as you're aware of his opulence, like Vasudeva and Devaki, what happens? What happens? Yeah, exactly. Reverence comes into the heart. What is it? What is reverence? Reverence means like this. But what else does it mean? What other emotion is there? Fear, exactly. There's fear, and when there's fear, there cannot be love intensely. Of course, there's reverential love, but this kind of love, you can't. It is cooled down when there is fear and reverence and awe. You are so great. You are so great. You are all powerful. So this very interesting phenomenon is going to take place. The transcendental knowledge about who Krishna actually is, and it's true, it's all true, is going to meet this tidal wave of love that is possessed by Nanda Yashoda. Or you could say that, or maybe we could turn it around, this wave of knowledge is going to meet this forest fire of loving separation. Now, fire and water cannot exist simultaneously, in case you haven't noticed, in the same place at the same time. So what's going to happen? Is the fire going to evaporate the water of their love? Or do you think they're... their love is so powerful, it's going to extinguish the knowledge. And then we will hear one at the end, Krishna willing. We'll hear this, one of my favorite commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he explains how Nanda Maharaj is thinking when he hears this true knowledge about who Krishna is. What he's actually thinking, because these great acharyas have such intimate relationship with Krishna, with Nanda Maharaj, with the Braja Gopis, with the friends of Krishna. They can tell you, they have access into their consciousness. So they can tell you the way that they think. It is very difficult to know the mind of another. You have to put your, you have to become on, as we would say nowadays, the same wavelength, so to speak. Just like, and it's a good analogy, a wavelength, because if you have right now, even though we don't perceive it, if we have a radio or if everyone has their mobile phones, there's so many different waves coming in, and you only pick up the sound vibration coming through the waves that your phone or your radio is tuned into. So when our consciousness is tuned into the consciousness of the Brijvasis, we can understand the way they think. But what does it take to have our consciousness tuned into their consciousness? It's a lot more expensive than getting a mobile phone and a SIM card, and it's more expensive than buying a radio or even a shortwave radio, because the cost of this is prema bhakti. You have to have the same type of a mood of loving prema as they have. That means no material attachments. And a loving of Krishna in a specific mood, and that love has to be all-consuming as well. It has to be all-consuming. It has to be ablaze. It cannot be lukewarm. And it has to be fully centering on loving Krishna. It has to be fully attached to and attracted to Him. In a specific mood also, the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. So to tune our consciousness into Vrindavan, into that vibration, so to speak, into that is the purpose of what of all the sadhana, the practices of Krishna consciousness, the chanting of Krishna's names. First to clean the heart of all its material desires, and then gradually to fill the heart, the consciousness, with love for Krishna in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, a calling out. So then, like the great acharyas, we will also be able to understand. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur shall reveal things to us about how Nanda Maharaj was thinking. Okay, now I shall begin Uddhava's words. Uddhava said, this is text 30. He's beginning to speak. First, I'll read the first four verses, because that's first section. And then we'll go over them. Uddhava said, O respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yasoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world. Since you have developed such a loving attitude towards Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all living beings. These two lords, Mukunda and Balaram, are each the seed and womb of the universe, the creator and his creative potency. They enter the hearts of the living beings and control their conditioned awareness. They are the primeval, original, supreme. Anyone, even a person in an impure state, who absorbs his mind in him, in Krishna, for just a moment at the time of death, such a person burns up all traces of sinful reactions and immediately attains the supreme transcendental destination in a pure spiritual form as he falls into the sun. You too, he's described the glories of Krishna, and then he's talking about Nanda and Yasoda. You too have rendered exceptional loving service to him. How have they done that? They have served him with their full consciousness as their parents, as parents. Parents is a servant with full love. So you have rendered exceptional loving service to him, Lord Narayan, the super soul of all and the cause of all existence, the great soul who, although the original cause of everything, has a human-like form. What pious deeds could still be required of you? So he's glorifying Krishna and glorifying them, the parents of Krishna. But he's saying, ultimately, that understand who your son is. You're lamenting for him, but you should understand who he is, and then you will understand that he's actually not your son at all. He's the original, the source of the universes, the Supreme Lord. And then when you understand who he is, then your feeling of separation for him will dissipate completely. It will be gone. So the first verse. O respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yasoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world, since you have developed such a loving attitude towards Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all living beings. So what makes one worthy of praise is if one has developed love for Krishna, love for God, loving service. Here's the purport. No, yes, purport. Understanding Nanda's mood as expressed by his statement Manye Krishnam Ramam Chapatav Iha Sarottamau, I think Krishna and Rama must be two exalted demigods, Nanda Maharaj had said this. Uddhava here refers to Krishna as Lord Narayan. So he's going to instruct them first, even though he knows that they are the most exalted. Here's the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to this verse, text 30. No exit. No, Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami says, and thus Uddhava now desires to console the two of them, first summoning up his courage by describing their glories. Uddhava hit on the opportunity of Nanda's speaking words of the same sort, and thus spoke in that manner in the two verses beginning Yuvam, that means 30 and 31. For Narayan, the shelter of even of the three Purusha forms, who creates the Mahatattva and so on, who is the spiritual master of everyone, the implication is this mentality directed towards the manifestation of the Lord who is greater than even the master of the spiritual sky, that mentality is capable of bringing him under control, bringing Krishna under control, since it is full of parental affection for him. So glorifying their mentality. Then the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this 30th verse. Uddhava said, amongst all praiseworthy devotees in this world, Vasudeva and Devaki are especially praiseworthy. But you too are most praiseworthy because of the superiority of your prema. Nanda already said in verse 23 that he knew that Krishna and Balaram were gods, demigods. Knowing that Nanda appreciated Krishna's lordly aspect, Uddhava described Krishna in this verse as Narayan. Narayano samo gunai, as in the words of Gagarishi. As Narayan, the Adiguru, the guru of everyone. He does this to emphasize Krishna's power and to sympathize with Nanda and Yasoda's sentiments. So this is the proper way of communication. This is called empathic listening. He's heard what they have said, and he's starting with with the agreement. He shows that he understands what they have said in their mood, and he's taking it one step further. Now, text 31. So that verse again. You're so fortunate because you love so much you have developed such a loving attitude towards Lord Narayan, the spiritual master of all living beings. 31. These two lords, Mukunda and Balaram, are each the seed and the womb of the universe, the creator and his creative potency. They enter the hearts of living beings and control their conditioned awareness. They are the primeval, the original, supreme. So that one who you love is actually the supersoul and the source of the supersoul. They're the seed in the womb of the universe. They enter the hearts of everyone as Kiradakshai Vishnu. They are the primeval, original, supreme Lord. You are so fortunate. You love Lord Narayan, who is the source of the entirety of material existence. Otau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni rama makunda purusha padanam anvya bhuteshu valakshanasya janasya chetasa imau purano. He is the Purana, the oldest Lord. And you're loving him as a son, but you should know who he is. We'll read the comment of Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Swami to this verse. Srila Swami says, Uddhava describes how Krishna and Balaram are the spiritual masters of all in terms of their being the progenitor and their being the controller of everything in existence. Rama and Mukunda, these two, are the bija and the yoni, the seed and the womb of the universe, its immediate cause and its ingrediential cause, the namittakara and the upadankara, some technical Sanskrit terms. But it may be objected, isn't it an established fact that the immediate and ingrediential cause of creation are the Purusha and Pradhan? This has been explained in the second and third cantos of the Bhagavatam. And the answer is Purusha Pradhanam, that Purusha is Krishna and Balaram. That means that Mahavishnu, Karanadakshai Vishnu, Gaurvadakshai Vishnu, and Chiradakshai Vishnu, they are all his potency. They're all his plenary portion and his potency, rather. Thus, the Pradhan, which is the Pradhan means the primal or the first, the primal ingredient that the Upadankara, the ingredients that everything that we see and feel and touch and perceive in the universe, this is coming from the Pradhan and the Pradhan's interaction with the Purusha, with Mahavishnu and the Gaurvadakshai Vishnu. So those are expansions of him. In this way, how he is the source of everything is stated. Furthermore, he enters within the hearts of all living beings. They rule over, they become the controllers. This means they're saying, your sons, who is Lord Narayan, who is the Purusha. They rule over, become the controllers of the jivas, whose knowledge coverings are distinct from themselves is of names and forms. That's a little obscure. How? They are Purana, without beginning. In other words, because they have no beginning, they are the cause and thus the controller of everything, because everyone in this world has a beginning and a cause. So this is who you're loving as your son. You should know this. Jiva Goswami says, they rule over the jiva within each body, whose true knowledge is distinct from the body. Or else the verse beginning Etau, this verse states how they are Narayan and the spiritual master of everyone. The word Vishvasa implies, by the use of the word cha, this is because they rule over, they influence in a manifested and unmanifested way. They are the indwelling supersoul who, even while entering within all living beings, is separate from all living beings. He is both the shelter of Paramatma and Brahman, And then he quotes, Jiva Goswami quotes Brahmano hi pratishtaham from the Bhagavad Gita, saying that what Krishna says, I am the source of Brahman. So this is who your boys are. And they're thinking of them just as Krishna and Balaram, these most beautiful sons of ours. And they're crying and stunned in ecstasy. And Uddhava is giving them transcendental knowledge. 32 and 33 are together. Anyone, and this is, of course, this knowledge is important for us. And this verse is especially important for us to understand and, of course, apply. Anyone, even a person in an impure state, who absorbs his mind in him, in Krishna, just for a moment at the time of death, burns up all traces of sinful reactions and immediately attains the supreme transcendental destination in a pure spiritual form, which is as effulgent as the sun. This is the power of your Krishna and Balaram. Not only are they the source and they're both causes, that the progenitors, everything comes from them because they are the source of everything in existence as the Purusha, but they're also the ingredients, called the Upadan Karan, the ingrediential cause of everything in existence as because they are the source of the Pradhan, which is the primal material ingredient from that everything comes from when it is mixed with the Lord's glance and the karma and the living entities. This is described again especially in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. So this also comes from Krishna. So not only is Krishna and this, but he's so powerful that just by remembering him at the time of death, one's entire consciousness is purified. And then one attains a pure, effulgent spiritual form. One attains one's actual form. So since you two have rendered such exceptional loving service to him who is the Purusha and the Pradhan and so powerful that just remembrance of him allows one to attain this effulgent, his spiritual body, but you two are so exceptional because of the service that you've rendered to him with great love to Lord Narayan, who is the super soul and the all in all and the cause of all existence. He is that great soul, although the original cause of everything has a human-like form. So therefore, you've already have achieved something so wonderful that what pious deeds could still be required of you? You've already done the most wonderful thing. So here is the comment of Srila Jiva Goswami on this verse. Thus, seeing Uddhava seeing that they are still not experienced satisfaction in their minds. So he's told them, your boys are the Supreme Narayan, and they're not satisfied. He says the same thing again, elaborating with the logic what to speak of in the two verses beginning Yasman 32 and 33. So he's trying again to say, you don't know how lucky you are. You're so fortunate. Your boys that you love are the Supreme Lord. And they're not at all affected by this knowledge. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Uddhava said, it's very much the same mood. No, that's 32, 33. Uddhava said, after burning up all traces of karma, one goes to Vaikuntha in a pure spiritual body, which is as bright as the sun. You too have rendered devotion to Narayan, who is the soul of all and the cause of all causes, even though he appeared in the form of a human. For you, therefore, what activities remain to be done? The word sukrityam required pious activities. indicates that for Nanda and Yashoda, nothing remains to be done. They are not on the platform of sadhana, but on the platform of sadhya. They have attained the goal. But for Krishna, so they've finished their work. But what, and then he puts in the point, but Krishna still has some work to do. For them, they've achieved the perfection. But Krishna has some work to do. And what is that work? For Krishna, there remains the work of consoling and pacifying them because he is obedient to them. So because they can only think of Krishna with great love as their son, Krishna can only think of them with great love as his parents. They have captured Krishna. 34, which is the final verse of this section. No, that was the final verse. Now we'll move to the next section. 34 and to 36, I believe. Yes, 34 to 36. Don't worry. Krishna is coming back soon. He tries to console them with that. So he says in 34, and we'll read 34, 35, and 36. Infallible Krishna, Achyuta, the Lord of the devotees, will soon return to Vraja to satisfy his parents. And now he's delivering, in the purport it describes how he's delivering the actual message of Krishna that Krishna wanted to tell them. I'm soon coming back. Having killed Kamsa, the enemy of the Yadus, in the wrestling arena, Krishna now surely will fulfill his promise to you by coming back. O most fortunate ones, do not lament. You will see Krishna again very soon. He is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant asleep in wood. So that 34th verse, here's the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, 34th, he's saying, don't worry, he's coming back soon to satisfy you. Our dear child Uddhava, I have heard that you are very intelligent. This is what Nanda Maharaj's mood is. But now I see you're actually foolish because you're praising us. Alas, alas, who else would let such a wonderful son who is full of good qualities, leave his home and go elsewhere? Who is there in the three worlds more unfortunate, degraded, and miserable than us? We are to be condemned by everyone because we had the jewel of Krishna and we have let it go. Who is, you're saying we're so fortunate. So Uddhava is now for the first time being confronted with a prema bhakti, a love on a completely different level. And he doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to comprehend it. It's beyond his experience. It's beyond his unlimited knowledge. Because we can even, that the loving, the madhurya, the sweetness of the loving aspect of their relationship with Krishna is so dominant, nothing else can enter. Anticipating this statement by Nanda Maharaj, Uddhava speaks consolingly in this verse. Uddhava said, Achyuta means one who never falls or breaks his promise. He will come very soon to Braja. Acting as the master and protector of the Yadus, Krishna will stay here and fulfill all of your desires. 35. Having killed Kamsa, the enemy of the Yadus, in the wrestling arena, Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. So it says he will fulfill his promise to you by coming back. So where did Krishna promise Nanda Maharaj that he'd come back? This is at the end or at the beginning of the chapter of the previous chapter, right before Krishna goes to the Gurukula, when he and Nanda Maharaj and Balaram meet, and there's some wonderful, wonderful verses exchanged between Balaram and Krishna and Nanda Maharaj. But one of the verses that Krishna says, and again in there, the purports of Vishnu Thakavati Thakur are astounding and wonderful. And in that one is the one where he describes how Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj and everyone separate into the prakat and the uppercut leelas. So he says, Krishna says to Nanda Maharaj, this is in the previous chapter in text 23, "Now you should all return to Braja, dear father. We shall come to see you, our dear relatives who suffer in separation from us, as soon as we have given some happiness to your well-wishing friends," meaning the other Yadus, Vasudeva and the family. So he says here, "We shall come to see you. We shall come to see you." Just after a little bit of time, after we give some happiness. But he promises them, we will come and see you. So therefore, Uddhava is calling him a chuta, one who is infallible, who never fails to keep his word. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues saying, he will. He will fulfill his promise. The present tense karoti, well, that's 35. Yes, 35, is used to indicate that Krishna is fulfilling his promise at this very moment, because the karoti 35. Krishna satyam karoti tat. He will make true his word. But actually the meaning, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, it's the present tense. He is making true his promise that he's with you, that he will return to you. So even now he's telling him he's with you. In fact, in another manifestation, Krishna was actually present in Braja at that moment, being attentively cared for by Nanda and Yasoda, though unseen by Uddhava. By the influence of Saraswati, Uddhava's words were actually true. So that's the dual manifestation that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described previously of the prakat and aprakat lila, the lila where Krishna is with, the manifestation where Krishna is with Nanda Maharaj and Nanda is caring for him, and this manifestation where Krishna is separate from Nanda Maharaj and Nanda Maharaj is overwhelmed in separation. 36. The final verse in this section. O most fortunate ones, Uddhava tells him, do not lament. You will see Krishna again very soon. He is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant in wood. Oh, this is actually moves to the next section where he's going to tell the glories of Krishna. But Srila Jiva Goswami comments on text 36. Anticipating that they are especially unable to tolerate delay, he speaks the verse beginning, "Ma makidyatam mahabhago, O most fortunate ones, do not lament." Because they said Krishna's coming back, but he perceives that they're incapable of tolerating any delay. So he speaks this verse. Then guessing that they cannot tolerate even a very short delay, he follows the ordinary means of dispelling sorrow by instructing them in transcendental truth with the words beginning anta. That's in the second part of this verse. So he's going to give them transcendental knowledge. Just like if when someone's son has died, and this happens in with Chitraketu Maharaj in what canto?
Six.
And it happens when Mahaprabhu's Leela with Srivas Thakur, when the son has died, there's the speaking of transcendental knowledge. You should know that the souls are eternal and our relationship with Krishna is eternal, and the Jayate Mriyate Vakadachin Nayam Budva Vanatana Buya Ajonityam Shashvatoyam Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire, that the soul is eternal and the body must die, and the soul can never be killed, and we take a succession of births. So now Uddhava is going to speak transcendental knowledge, which comes 37-39 over here. So he's going to speak that Krishna is in their hearts. So there in 37 he says, and we'll read 37-39, for him, and just imagine him telling this to Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, for him no one is especially dear. Savaham savabhuteshu name dveshostina priya, nor is anyone despicable. I don't like this person, and especially dear, superior or inferior, and yet he is not indifferent to anyone. He treats everyone equally. He is free from all desire for respect, and yet he gives respect to all. He's talking about the super soul here. He has no mother, no father, no wife, no children or other relatives. No one is related to him, and yet no one is a stranger to him. He has no material body and no birth. It's all true. It's all perfect tattva, spiritual truth for the super soul, for the paramatma, for the supreme param brahma. But we will see how these words affect Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda quite soon. He has no work to do in this world that would oblige him to take birth in a pure, impure, or mixed species of life. Yet, to enjoy his pastimes and to deliver his saintly devotees, he manifests himself. So it goes on, he goes on like this. Although beyond the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, the transcendental Lord accepts association with them as his play, as his lila. Thus the unborn Supreme Lord utilizes the material modes to create, maintain, and enjoy. And they're just thinking about this unlimited super soul equal to all, Supreme Brahman, as their little boy. And these words do not enter their hearts at all, even though they're completely true. But their words or their thoughts are even more true, because their love for him stops Krishna, practically speaking, from acting in that way. Otherwise, as Nanda Maharaj will say later, how would it be possible for Mother Yasoda to bind him up? How would it be possible for that unlimited Lord who is all-powerful to accept the fact that Mother Yasoda is chastising him and tears are running from his eyes and spreading the mascara, the kajal, down his eyes? How would it be possible if Krishna is on the all-powerful Supreme Lord, then how could have that had happened? And we all saw it happened. So we know it's true. That's his mood. We know it's true. But you don't understand. He's our son. So the two pieces of Krishna's unlimited power and opulence, when they meet together with their love, the love just overpowers it. They even know that he's the Supreme Lord. But they don't even care that he's the Supreme Lord. And that's specifically the function of the power of their prema bhakti, which rules Vrindavan. Even it rules Krishna. So this is really, in one sense, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Maya, they are the prelude to what's going to happen next when he goes to the most, Uddhava goes to the most advanced. He's going to sit in on one of the class of the most advanced prema bhakti, the Mahabhava of Srimati Radharani and the Braja Gopis. And that comes in the next chapter, and it just begins. We get a little hint at the end of this chapter. So let's see if we can get through this section here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments to 37-39. 37, we won't read that one, 38. The direct meaning of the verse which Uddhava revealed to Nanda is obvious. There is a hidden meaning as well in Vishwanatha Chakravarti. That's why he has no mother, no father, no wife, children or other relatives. No one is related to him, and yet no one is a stranger to him. He has no material body and no birth. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment he says the direct meaning of this verse about the Supersoul, which Uddhava revealed to Nanda, is obvious. There is a hidden meaning as well. And he doesn't say what the hidden meaning is. In 39, the verse says, he has no work to do in this world that would oblige him to take birth in pure, impure, or mixed species of life. He has to enjoy his pastimes and deliver his saintly devotees. He manifests himself. Yada yada hidamasya glanya bhavati bharata bhutanam tadatmanam sri jamyam. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Uddhava said that Brahman does not take birth in wombs of goodness, passion, or ignorance because it is without birth and it has no karma nor a material body. Consequently, it does not have material activities or material goals. Krishna, however, takes birth from those whose natures are purely spiritual, beyond the material modes, such as Yasoda, Devaki, Kausalya. Afterwards, he appears with a body, has a mother and father, performs activities, fulfills responsibilities, and has goals. So that seems like that's the hidden meaning over there. As Krishna, he does have those things, that's the hidden meaning. However, Uddhava did not want to directly reveal this to Nanda, so he concealed it by saying, though Krishna is the original form of Brahman, out of his own compassion, he appears in a way suitable to deliver his devotees from suffering. 40. Although beyond the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the transcendental Lord accepts association with them as his play. Thus the unborn Supreme Lord utilizes the material modes to create, maintain, and destroy. So about Krishna or the Supersoul or the Purusha's relationship or the avatar's relationship with the modes. As stated in the Brahma Sutra, that's the Vedanta Sutra 2.1.34, Lokavat Lila Kaivalyam. The Lord performs his spiritual pastimes as if he were a resident of this world. Although the Lord does not favor or abuse anyone, we still observe happiness and suffering in this world. Have you noticed that? That there is happiness and suffering in this world? Have you noticed? But yet the Lord does not favor or abuse anyone. So what is the cause of the happiness and suffering in this world? Because we have studied the Bhagavad Gita, we know. The Gita, Bhagavad Gita 13.22, states, Karanam Guna Sangasya, we desire to associate with various qualities of material nature, and thus we must accept the consequence. We desire, based on false ego, to enjoy in this world. Karanam guna sangasya, and that places us, bhunkte prakriti janiha, karanam guna sangasya, that places us under the control of the material modes, and we get the consequences of our desire, incapable desire to be the enjoyers and controllers. The Lord provides the field of material nature in which we exercise our free will. Foolish non-devotees do not only attempt to cheat the Lord by trying to exploit his nature, but when they suffer the reaction, they blame God for their own misdeeds. So if the purport says, the commentary here of the BBT says, foolish non-devotees, how foolish then are the devotees who do that? They're not yet devotees. This is the shameless position of those who are envious of God. And we'll read the comment of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami. We'll read just Vishwanatha's comment. Even though Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature, by glancing at his Maya Shakti, he accepts Sattva, Raja, and Tamaguns. Nanda Maharaj, for what purpose? Uddhava, for the purpose of playing, even though Krishna is transcendental, beyond play. By this, Uddhava intended to make Nanda Maharaj understand that Krishna does not even play. Uddhava, in truth, however, even though Krishna is transcendental, he appears within this world of illusion as Krishna and Rama to enjoy pastimes with his devotees. Although Krishna transcends the modes, he uses the modes to create the universe so that the jivas from the previous day of Brahma can reap the fruit of their good and bad karma and thus enjoy and suffer. What fault is there in Krishna for this? 41. Just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, one who is affected by false ego and thinks himself the doer when actually only his mind is acting. Very interesting verse, but on a philosophical level. I'll read it again. Explaining the nature of illusion in this world. Just as a person who is whirling around, so we could make a scientific experiment of this right now, we could all stand up and whirl around. And what happens when you whirl around? Are there any whirlers here? Only me. Just as a person who is whirling around, when he stops, what happens? What is your perception? You look and you see that the whole world is whirling. But is the whole world whirling? No, this is just an effect of your mind due to the fact that you have been whirling around. So just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, so one who is affected by false ego, that's thinking himself the center of existence, thinking himself as separate from Krishna, he thinks himself the doer of activities. It is all resting on me. I am doing that and I am doing that. And actually, he is not doing it. It is just his mind acting. His mind, based on false ego, is deluding him, especially due to the mode of passion. This whirling around, thinking oneself, I have to do this and I have to do that, I have to do that. This is all especially due to the mode of passion. In ignorance, when one is heavily affected by the mode of ignorance, then instead of wanting to do something, one's mood is calm. Tomorrow I can do it, or whatever. Sometime, and the mode of goodness is some satisfaction. There is equipoised nature. Equipoised nature. But when passion is pushing after it and everything is just resting on me. So for devotees, even though they're acting, they never think that it is resting all on them. They see, they know they must do their part, their parishrama, their work, their part. But they see that everything is actually resting upon Krishna. And by Krishna's will, it happens. Because Krishna is Sarvakarana Karanam. He is the cause of action. That is the ultimate cause of action. So the purport here, short purport to 41. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a parallel idea. Although our happiness and distress are caused by our own interaction with the material qualities, we perceive the Lord to be their cause. Jiva Goswami says to 41, the status of being the doer, feeling oneself the one who is doing everything, which actually belongs directly to the Supreme Controller, he's the one doing everything, is also partaken of, experienced by the jiva, in illusion, affected by false ego. Explain with this example, beginning in this first yata. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this point. Uddhava said, 41, no, not required to read that, same point. Okay. 41, 42, 43. We'll finish up to this point of Uddhava's philosophical talking, and then we'll come to the point of how Nanda Maharaj took all this heavy philosophy that Uddhava was speaking to him in, while he was in his stunned state of ecstatic separation from Krishna. So we'll finish this philosophical point, and then when we meet again after a half hour break, then we'll hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes as the mood and consciousness of Nanda Maharaj. So 42, just these two more verses here. 42. The Supreme Lord Hari is certainly not your son alone, O Nanda Maharaj. Rather, being the Lord, he is the son, the soul, the father, and mother of everyone. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadhan. For us to think like this is very wonderful. We'll never feel alone. Suridam Savabhutanam. He is our dearest friend. Surit, dearest friend. Nothing can be said, 43, to exist independent of Lord Achyuta. Nothing is independent or separate from him. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing's heard or seen. Nothing in the past, present, or future, good and bad. Nothing moving or non-moving, great or small. He is indeed everything, for he is the Supreme Soul. So they're telling them about this, their Krishna. This is what Uddhava is saying about their Krishna. So this is the end of Uddhava's words. We'll read some of the comments and then we'll stop for our break. And then we'll hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has to say about how Nanda Maharaj took this. So for 42, Srila Sridhar Swami says, furthermore, he is not only the son of you two, but he is the son of everyone. Moreover, he is not only a son, but he's not only your son, but he's also the father and the mother of everyone. Thus, in order to avoid bewildering them while explaining how he's the supreme soul of all, Uddhava states that the relationships with Krishna are many. In these two verses, Jiva Goswami comments, having thus discussed his general influence upon the general class of people, now Uddhava more specifically establishes the special relationship of the two of them with the Lord, that he's not only your son, he's everything to everyone. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, 42. Uddhava said, you should not think of the creator of the whole universe as your son or the source of your happiness or distress. Although Krishna is the Supreme Lord, if you still think of him as your son, then listen as I speak the truth. And then Uddhava speaks this verse. Krishna is not just your son, but whoever cultivates a sentiment for him as their son will have him as a son. Anyone who thinks of Krishna as the most beloved of their soul, Atma Prishta, will achieve him as their dearmost. For those who think Krishna as their father, he is their father. Because Krishna is the controller, the Ishwar, nothing is impossible for him. And then he ends, as we read, nothing can be said to exist independent of Lord Achyuta. Nothing. This is your boy. You're thinking as your boy, but understand who he actually is. He's trying to bring their prema down so that they won't be experiencing such intense separation, and then they'll live. Nothing can be said to exist independent of Lord Achyuta. Nothing heard or seen, nothing in the past, present or future, nothing moving or unmoving, great or small. He is indeed everything, for He is the Supreme Soul. Let me continue instead of stopping here. While Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, so who's Krishna's messenger? Uddhava. The night ended. They were speaking all night. O king, because Sukadev Goswami is narrating this to Maharaj Prakrit. The women of the cowherd village, because the night is ending, rose from bed and lighting lamps, they worshipped the household deities. This is the Braja Gopikas, the young ones and the older ones. Then they began churning the yogurt into butter. Now here's the comment of Sridhar Swami on this. They worship the entrance porches of the houses, the entrance into the house. Srila Jiva Goswami says, thus having discussed his general, this verse beginning Evam implies they never came to a reconciliation. Uddhava was speaking philosophy and it was never reconciled at all with Nanda's mood. This is what Jiva Goswami says. Okay, now let's hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Although the entire night passed in discussion, Uddhava could not pacify Nanda and Yasoda, nor could he get them to accept his advice, his instructions. Then Nanda considered things in this way. So this is how Nanda, after hearing all this philosophy, which was all true, about who Krishna was and what his power actually is, he considered things in this way, Nanda Maharaj did. Uddhava wants to enlighten us by saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Do we not know that? At Krishna's name-giving ceremony, I heard Garga Muni say, Narayano Samo Gunai, your son will be equal to Narayan in qualities. Indeed, who else is there more equal to Narayan than Krishna? Therefore, from Garga we learn that our son is Narayan. Beside that, we also personally experienced our son to be Narayan when he killed Putana. He killed Aga. He killed Bakasura. He stopped the forest fire. How? He drank up the fire. And he lifted Govardhan Hill. And he made the ruler of Varuna Loka offer respects to him. Certainly I realize that Krishna is Narayan, the super soul, and that he's the supreme Brahman. Nevertheless, nothing can stop me from thinking of Krishna as my son. The proof is Garga's words. Garga charges that he's Narayan, but he's also said, Tasman Nandatma Jo Yamte, O Nanda, this son of yours, he will save you from all difficulties. So even when Garga Muni said that he's equal to Narayan, he said he is your son. So this is the only way that I think of him. Even though, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, even though Krishna may be the Supreme Lord, we do not think of him as an object of our worship. We simply think of Krishna as our son, and we find satisfaction by offering him the remnants of our tsud betonas. If he were not our son, if he was the Lord only, if that's who he was, and he wasn't actually our son, as Uddhava is saying, he's not your son, he's the super soul, he's the son of everyone, he's everything. Everything comes from him. But if he wasn't our son, our minds would not be satisfied when we gave him the betel nuts. Before Krishna's birth, and he wouldn't have accepted it. Before Krishna's birth, we could meditate on Narayan, our family deity. But now, as soon as we meditate on Narayan, Narayan appears directly in front of us. This is a sign that our mind has achieved satisfaction by offering him our betel nuts. So he must be our son, because we would be disturbed by our offense if he wasn't our son, if he was just Lord Narayan. So somehow Nanda Maharaj is keeping, he's able to keep all that knowledge. Yes, we know he's that. But the tidal wave of his love for Krishna is so powerful and so huge that that knowledge has no effect, like the fire has no effect in the ocean. Therefore, acting like this in relationship to our son is not a fault. We are certainly Krishna's mother and father. Furthermore, Krishna's own realization is in this matter is proof, also proof that we too are his parents. We have seen many times that his face becomes sad if we don't pamper him, if we don't treat him gently by offering him the remnants of our chewed betel nuts. If we don't lift him on our laps, Krishna becomes sad. If we don't embrace him, he becomes sad. If we don't kiss him, he becomes sad, and so on. So, is he our son? What do you think? If Yasoda were not his mother, how could she tie him up when he broke the yogurt pots? If he's the all-pervading, all-powerful Lord, how would it have been possible for her to tie him? And seeing him unhappy upon being tied up, I freed him, and he smiled with happiness. How could she have tied him? How could he have been miserable? Actually, of course, when Krishna was tied up by Mother Yasoda, what did he do? He pulled that the grinding mortar. He pulled it this way and that way. And on the way to the Jamalarjun trees, he pulled it this way and he pulled it towards somebody's house and stole some more butter. And then he pulled it to someone's house over there and stole more butter. And then he pulled the grinding mortar in between two trees. And he pulled down the two trees and it made a loud sound. And Krishna was laughing and playing with his friends. And then Nanda Maharaj came, "Oh, my boy." And Krishna immediately, "Who has done this to you? Who has done this to you?" Krishna wouldn't answer. "Who has done this to you? Has Yasoda Maya done this to you?" So, Nanda Maharaj immediately untied him, and seeing him unhappy on being tied up, I freed him, and he smiled with happiness. Because we are his parents, Krishna accepts our scolding, he accepts our commands, and even our tying him up, though he may be the Supreme Lord. It's like even Nanda Maharaj has knowledge of Krishna's position, but it doesn't affect him. If it were not a fact that we are Krishna's parents, then how could the Absolute Personality, the all-pervading Absolute, become bound up by us? But now, after Krishna has killed Chanura, Kamsa, and others in Mathura, everyone is telling him, "Oh Krishna, you are certainly the Supreme Lord." Moreover, Devaki tells Krishna, "I am your mother." And Vasudev tells him, "I am your father." And others say, "We are your paternal uncles." And yet others tell Krishna that they are his brothers, his relatives, and friends. Whenever they try to bring Krishna to their various houses by inviting him there, they simply prolong his stay in Mathura. Then our son, the crest jewel of knowers of proper conduct, he looks at their faces and he falls further into a terrible trap. He does not come home. Being incapable of returning to Braja because of his kind-hearted, generous, benevolent nature. I suppose, Nanda Maharaj is talking, that Krishna told everyone, "Indeed, I am the Supreme Lord, the creator of the universe. Who can be my mother? Who can be my father? And who can be my relative? Just look in all the scriptures and you will see that I belong only to that person who renders devotional service to me, and I belong to no one else. Only to his house will I go. And he alone is my father. And he alone, the person who worships me with devotion, he is all my relations." So therefore, Nanda Maharaj is saying, because Krishna, after hearing everyone say that he's the Supreme Lord, is speaking this to everyone. And therefore Uddhava must have heard this, and therefore he's telling it to us. Nanda Maharaj continued to think, but this Uddhava is simply a child. Even though he may be very intelligent, he's not actually very mature in his understanding. He cannot fathom the depths. He cannot understand how deep my son's heart is. And he's taken the meaning of Krishna's words literally. When Krishna is saying that, yes, I must be the Supreme Lord, and no one is my mother, no one is my father, no one is dear to me. My devotee is the one who is dear to me. And someone who offers me something with devotion, I will come to that person's house. And Uddhava is not yet mature, and he just accepts everything in just a simple and literal way. So he's taken the literal meaning of Krishna's words as if they were Krishna's real thoughts. Uddhava has come from Mathura, and therefore, not really understanding Krishna, he's given us this advice. But what my son has cleverly spoken is actually correct. And that is, he who renders devotion to me is my father, and it is in his house that I will reside. Therefore, Uddhava is bringing a message to me, and now I will send back to Mathura with Uddhava another message. And this is what that message will say. I will send it to Krishna. My dear Krishna, I, Nanda Maharaj, I have devotion for your lotus feet. Be merciful and be pleased with me so that I can attain you by the devotional processes of hearing and chanting about you, remembering you, and offering obeisances unto you. It is I who have the devotion. Receiving this message, my son Krishna will walk into the assembly of the Yadavas, and he will announce to everyone, O men of the Yadu dynasty, you could not exhibit devotion to me in this place, but Nanda Maharaj, he is doing so. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj is my real father. He is my friend, and he is my beloved. And I am going to his house. And saying this to everyone, Krishna will leave and come here at once. At last, Nanda Maharaj forgot all these deliberations, and he did not send any message to Krishna due to the influence of the Sanchari Bhava of humility. Now, to continue to the actual text, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said, the night had ended and everyone awoke, and and they would begin to do their worship, their daily worship, and they began to churn their butter. And he says, so Vishwanath goes to that point. Rising during the Brahma Muhurta period, so they talked all night. The Braja Gopis lit lamps, they worshipped their entrances of their homes, they churn yogurt, and they perform their domestic duties. Now we're going to get our introduction to the Braja Gopikas. As they pulled on the churning ropes with their bangled arms, the women of Braja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the lamp's light. Their hips, their breasts, their necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kumkum, glowed radiantly with the luster of their earrings reflected from their cheeks. So everything again was very wonderful in the morning. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, basically repeats what the verses said. As as the ladies of Braja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna. As they were churning, as they were worshipping, their songs blended with the sounds of their churning, and it ascended to the sky and dissipated all inauspiciousness in every direction. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the word Udgayatinam, loudly singing, indicates that the gopis were absorbed in thinking of lotus-eyed Aravindalochanam, Krishna, and feeling his presence. Thus they loudly sang in great bliss. Dressing nicely with colorful clothing and ornaments, smearing kunkum on oneself and singing sweetly do not occur in the state of separation and lamentation. Therefore it is understood that at the end of night, Uddhava again saw the manifestation of Braja with Krishna present there, just as he had seen at the end of the previous day when he arrived at Braja. So again, it shifted after speaking to Nanda Maharaj, that Nanda Maharaj's house was completely dirty, there were cobwebs, spider webs everywhere, nothing had been cooked. As we heard yesterday, they hadn't eaten or cooked anything since Krishna left. Mother Yasoda hadn't done anything, and one Brahmin went and cooked enough sweet rice, chipped rice with some sweet for Uddhava to eat, so they, of course, they thought he would be hungry. But everything else was completely devastated. So that was completely in contrast to what Uddhava saw when he entered Vrindavan, because he had seen the prakat, the uppercut manifest. So now that uppercut, where everything is joyous and Krishna's presence has manifested again. 47. And you've all been so patient, and there's only a few more verses left. When the godly sun has risen, the people of Braja noticed the golden chariot in front of Nanda Maharaj's doorway. Who does this belong to? They asked. So Srila Sridhar Swami says, this is the young ladies, the Braja gopis that spoke. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they saw the chariot because they hadn't seen it before, because the dust raised by the cow's hoofs had covered the chariot, so no one knew that Uddhava was there. So this is text 47. Vishwanath says, Brajokasha, the residents of Braja, refers to the gopis who were feeling separation upon seeing the chariot of Uddhava. Here the manifestation of Braja in separation from Krishna again appears. So it's shifted back to Braja in separation. And when they see the chariot, this is what they say. Perhaps Akrura has returned. Akrura, he who has fulfilled Kamsa's desire by taking lotus-eyed Krishna to Mathura. The purport here says the gopis angrily spoke this verse. And then the final verse. They're thinking it's Akrura. Is he now? They know that Kamsa has died, been killed by Krishna. Is he now going to use our flesh to offer funeral oblations for his master, who is so satisfied with his service? In other words, he's killing us anyway. So why doesn't he just cut our flesh? He's done everything to satisfy Kamsa. He's killed us. So now continue. Take our flesh and offer it to satisfy Kamsa after he's been killed by Krishna. This is his introduction to the Braja gopis. As the women were speaking in this way, Uddhava appeared, having finished his early morning duties. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in what India. For what purpose has Akrura come again, now that Kamsa has been killed? Considering this, the gopis propose a reason in this verse. Is he going to perform the funeral rites of his master Kamsa, who is pleased with his work of taking Krishna away from Braja by using our flesh as an offering to him? As the gopis were speaking like this, Uddhava approached. So they're happy that it is Uddhava. Why are they happy? Because Uddhava looks just like Krishna, exactly like Krishna. And he's even wearing the prasadam remnants of Krishna's clothes. So that next chapter. Oh, it's so difficult not to keep reading. But what to do? Okay, any questions or comments? Thank you very much. Yes.
Is there an explanation somewhere of what is the time period between when Krishna left and when...
Yeah, we spoke about that yesterday. There's different ways to understand it, but this is when Krishna, in the chapter sequence, this is 46 and 47, Krishna goes to Gurukula in 45, and he stayed in Gurukula for 60 days. So as soon as he came back from Gurukula, he did two things. First thing he did was send Uddhava to Vrindavan. So we could say after this 2 months. And then after that he visited Kubja at her house. And at the same time, that's in 46, 48. And at the same time he visited Kura in his house, because he had promised to do that. Because when Akura brought Krishna to Vrindavan and he said, please come to my house. And he said, a little later I shall do that, but not yet. So that's one way to understand. Yeah.
You were saying that Uddhava was trying to bring down the intensity of feelings of separation of Nanda and Yashoda.
So that they wouldn't die. Yeah.
Was this primarily that reason, or is it because he just couldn't understand higher ecstasy that they were experiencing because he's in Sakyaras and they're in Vatsala?
No, it was that reason. He understood that they were experiencing such ecstasy, and therefore when he because we spoke about this yesterday too. See, when he spoke to them, he was joyous. That meant that he understood that they were in ecstasy. Otherwise, if he thought that it was just something on a misery level, he wouldn't have been joyous. So that was described in the verse just prior to this, the previous verse, so that must have been 29. But yet, he saw that they're not going to be able to live. And of course, that would cause Krishna pain, too. And they were such great devotees. So therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, see if he's anyway. It's stated he wanted to cool down their love, because Krishna had said to console them. Very mysterious is Vrindavan. The interplay of the devotees and together and with their Lord, and how things are done by Krishna's internal energy, and what everyone is learning and what we're supposed to learn is very, very mysterious. And actually it's not even that we have to learn anything. What we have to do is just appreciate how wonderful Vrindavan is. And let a little bit of the sweetness of Vrindavan enter into our hearts. That's all we actually have to do. And how do we do that? That's by listening to the words of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and listening to the words of Sukadeva Goswami. Because it is not of this world. It is just simply not of this world. And the sound vibration is not of this world, of the words of the Acharyas. So it has an effect on our consciousness. And what the effect is, that is that maybe a little bit of a desire, or even as Jiva Goswami explains in Bhakti Sandhava, maybe even a doubt enters the mind. Maybe it is true. He said that's the beginning. Maybe it is true. Maybe it is something wonderful there, and they're not just making the whole thing up. He said, that's the beginning of bhakti. So we just hear. And without hearing, Shravanadi Sudhachite Koribeyodoy, without hearing, the plant of our kripa will not become nourished and it will not grow. So we should hear about Krishna. So in this particular class, although some of the devotees just came for the first time to this class, but we started this at the first canto also. So there's been a build-up. So we studied this first canto and the second canto and the third canto. We've heard about how Krishna is, about the super soul and the pradhana and the creation in the third canto. We heard it three times about the creation in different parts of the third canto. So we should study the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, very, very carefully. And then, if Krishna willing, and then we can continue on and get to the real point of the whole of the Bhagavatam, is to present these pastimes of Krishna so that we have something to think about and talk about. The whole Bhagavatam is like that, but especially so that that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can be presented.
Seems like the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to hide our raga or emotions towards Radha.
Heighten?
To heighten.
Yes.
Our emotions towards Radha and Krishna. The knowledge now presented through Uddhava to the Vrajavasis seems like take down the emotions. So why Uddhava is presenting this knowledge?
Because he's showing. I explained that point, yes, even at the beginning of this class too, but also yesterday. This is one of the, usually in the second canto, in the tenth canto, there's a presentation of Leela, and then there is Tattva after that, because it's important that we see what happens when because we hear about Krishna, and then there's a tendency for the conditioned soul to think that these are the activities of an ordinary person. Even the Rasalila section or anything, or Krishna's killing this demon or that demon. So right after Leela, there is always this dispersion of someone's offering prayers and some philosophy. So we remember who Krishna is. Haribol, Shesha Maharaj, was just at the end of the class. You want to come in? It's more or less in a few minutes. I wish you were here to this purport we just read by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Well, Haribol, it's been a long time. You okay? When was the last time you were in Vrindavan?
5 years.
Did you bring?
No.
Yeah, Haribol. So mostly the presentation, even in the 10th canto, is like that. There's Leela and then there's philosophy. But here, this is in this chapter, the philosophy and the pastime is together. In this one chapter. And we're seeing what happens when the philosophy meets the Leela, which is going to dominate. Remember I used that example? There's the water coming in and then there's the fire. The two are incompatible. So does the water extinguish the fire or does the fire evaporate the water? Well, it depends how much water is there and how intense the fire is. So the fire of Nanda Maharaj's love, it is so powerful because Uddhava, he is no philosophical lightweight either. He's presented this very, very heavy and true philosophy about who Krishna is. So through the commentary, especially of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we see how that philosophy affected the mind of Nanda Maharaj. And how did it affect him? He just thought, anyway, he's very intelligent, but he's just still a little bit of a boy, and he's a little immature. He still hasn't understood deeply enough. When Krishna says something, you can't take his words just literally, but you have to understand the deep meaning of what he's saying. And then Nanda Maharaj very wonderfully says that he takes Uddhava's words and explains the deep meaning of it. Uddhava's words that I am the father and the mother of no one, but I belong to my devotees. So what he's saying is, Nanda Maharaj is saying, yes, that's what Krishna has said, because they've convinced him that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Mathura. And Krishna's heart is so deep and warm and benevolent that he won't argue with them. But what he really means is that look who has offered me the devotion. It is Nanda Maharaj. He is my father, and I will live in his home. Because we have so much love compared to the people in Mathura. What do they know about Krishna? Have they fed him? Have they done this? Have they done that? What do they know? What love do they have? So then he conceived, I'm going to send that message. And I'm going to tell Krishna, yes, you've said that you live wherever your devotee is. Who has more love for you than Mother Yasoda and I? So come home. Come home now. And he said, when Krishna reads this message, he's going to remember us and our love for him. And then he's going to walk into the assembly of Yadus, and he's going to announce this. Yes, I have said that I live wherever my devotees are. And there is no one who has more love for me than Nanda and Yasoda. And therefore, I am leaving. I'm going home. But then, because it's not exactly natural for a devotee to think, yes, I have the most love, but in the ecstasy of his wanting anything to see Krishna, to be with Krishna, only if Krishna would come back again so he could see him, in that ecstasy, he was thinking in that way. But then, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained, the Sanchari Bhav, which means the transitory emotion of Dainya, humility, entered his heart. And he said, how could I send this? So he never sent it. So when the knowledge, met the love of Nanda Maharaj, and this is what Krishna said right in the beginning. If you try to tell them philosophy, their prema will burn your knowledge to ashes. And that's basically what happened, to ashes. Because in Vrindavan, prema rules. It's actually a purport, a comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that explains this, that prema, that yogamaya, which rules Vrindavan, it serves the prema of the devotees. So it's not even yogamaya that rules Vrindavan, it is the prema of the Brajavasis, and it is tied Krishna up so tightly. Vrindavanam pratyaja padam ekam nagacchati. He cannot take one step out of Vrindavan. But then, the next chapter comes, where in this chapter we've gotten a glimpse of Nanda and Yasoda's love. We haven't seen much of Yasoda Mayi, whose love is even more than Nanda Maharaj's, because there was no question of her speaking, even. The only thing she could do was cry. She couldn't even be hospitable to Uddhava. But Nanda Maharaj, with his gravity, he controlled himself enough to speak. And he could see the nature of his speaking and thinking. Just Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And then in the next chapter, Krishna meets the Brajagopis. Excuse me, Uddhava meets the Brajagopis. And that's the topmost limit. I actually brought some of a little bit of the Udzana Nilamani, which discusses the topmost limit of Mahabhava, which is Adi Rudhabhava, and it's actually described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there was just one thing I wanted to read, because that is what we're going to. The topmost limit of Mahabhava is chapter 47, the next, where the Uddhava is confronted. He's been prepared to some degree. He's been astounded by Nandini Yasoda, and now he will meet the Brajagopikas and see Srimati Radharani herself. So he's meeting he's going for his PhD now in Prema Bhakti, and he's meeting the topmost professor, Srimati Radharani. That's what happened in the next chapter. But in to Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he speaks about Mahabhava, and this is just what he's going to be the essence of what's going to be said. Only in the conjugal mellows are the two ecstatic symptoms of Mahabhava called Ruda, advanced, and Adiruda, highly advanced, the most advanced. The advanced ecstasy, that's Ruda, is found amongst the Mahishis, the queens of Dwarka, and the Adiruda Mahabhava, advanced ecstasies, highly advanced, are found amongst the gopis. So then, in the purport, he quotes the Ujjana Lamani. The very sweet attraction of conjugal love increases through affection, counter-love, love, attachment, sub-attachment, ecstasy, and highly advanced ecstasy, Mahabhava. So these are all the technical Sanskrit terms that Prabhupada has translated. The platform of Mahabhava includes Ruda and Adiruda. These platforms are possible only in conjugal love, but advanced, the Adiruda Mahabhava, is found in Dwarka, whereas highly advanced ecstasy, the Ruda Mahabhava, is found amongst the Adiruda, is only found amongst the gopis. Adiruda Mahabhava is divided into two categories, Madana and Mohana. Meeting together is called Madana, and separation is called Mohana. So what we're going to see is the exhibition of Adiruda Mahabhava, which is the topmost, in separation. That's Mohana. And that's what she meant. And it's complete madness, basically, it's described in Ujjana Lamani. So there's a description of that over here. It goes on. And this is from Ujjana Lamani, also by Srila Rupa Goswami. And when compared to the Adiruda Mahabhava of the Brajagopikas and Srimati Radharani, I was just going to read one excerpt, one citation from Ujjana Lamani. Because there was one purport that, or comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's that we read yesterday, that was very esoteric. Of course, everything he writes is esoteric, meaning it's very, very deep, mysterious, and hard to understand. But there was one, I won't be able to find exactly where it was, but it said the gopis brought their highest love to the queens, and they also experienced it in Kurukshetra. Did anyone remember that from yesterday? Because I almost didn't remember it either, because it was something that I didn't really understand. But then I read this quotation from Ujjala Nilamani, a citation. During the meeting, and this is chapter 82, and so soon as this ends over here, chapter 47 ends, then we really move into Dwarka Lila. Mathura Leela is very short, and then Dwarka Leela, and then Krishna does so many wonderful things. He marries so many wives. He moves on and on and on, and then and Balaram comes back to Vrindavan in chapter 69, and then Krishna. There's no mention of Krishna coming back until after the killing of Dantavakra, which is later on, but. At one point, in chapter 82, the residents in Vrindavan all go to Kurukshetra during the occasion of a solar eclipse. And that is this incredible meeting of Krishna and the gopis, but without Vrindavan. We mentioned this yesterday. But without the land of Vrindavan, how important is the land of Vrindavan? Because the rasa couldn't be the same, even though the people were the same. Krishna was there, the gopis were there, but without Vrindavan, it didn't work, so to speak. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was celebrating in his ecstasies in Rath Yatra. So the 13th chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita and Madhya Leela, there's a most wonderful description of this, of the ecstasies Mahaprabhu was experiencing in Rath Yatra. So, but not only did Krishna see the Braja Gopis, and not only did the Braja Gopis see Krishna, but also the other people, because they stayed there for some months, they met the Brijbasis. So here's just one little glimpse of what happened when the Gopi Bhav meets the Mahishi Bhav. Mahishi means the queens. During the meeting, his queens and the Brijbasis of Kurukshetra, one of the women of Dwarka says, filled with the waves of love from the astonishing river of Radharani that entered the sea of Krishna at Kurukshetra. The waves of love from the astonishing river of Radharani entered the sea of Krishna, because he, Raso Vaisa, he is the reservoir of all rasa, and just as all rivers enter the sea, so the river of Radharani's love entered the sea of Krishna at Kurukshetra. And seeing this, because Krishna's queens were also there, seeing this, Bhadra, who was one of Krishna's queens, became stunned. When she saw the effect of Radharani's love on Krishna, she became stunned and could not speak. And Kalindi, also one of the first eight wives of Krishna, shed many tears. Satyabhauma, what number wife was she? Third, married third. In between was Jambavati. Satyabhauma cheerfully laughed and joked, and grave, profound Rukmini turned white, because they also experienced the superiority. They had heard about it, because Uddhava came back, and this was one of the reasons why Krishna sent Uddhava, because he was so trustworthy, everyone would believe him about the superiority. Everyone from Mathura Dwarka would believe him about the superiority of the Braja Prema. So when he came back, he told everyone, and there are, of course, many pastimes where the queens mention about the gopis, and Kunti Devi mentions about the gopis and the different residents of Vrindavan. But here they were seeing it for the first time for themselves. They saw the effect of Radharani's love on Krishna, and they all went into different sattvika bhavas expressed. They caught that. And they were amazed and joked. Rukmini became white, pale, practically. That means her blood left her body. She was about to faint. And here's this, and I will stop here. This Radharani, here's a quotation also from Ujjana Nilamani, of Radharani's words to Uddhava that are not in here. And this gives us a glimpse, small glimpse of of what love is and what the love of the Vrishvasis is. How pure, as in the words of Narottama Das Thakur, if you take gold and you purify it or melt it 100 times and remove the impurities, gold, it is compared to gold purified in 100 flames. If Mukunda returns to Raja village, we would become very happy, she tells Radharani, tells Uddhava. But if his return made him slightly unhappy, we would not feel any happiness at all. If Krishna does not come here from Mathura city, we will suffer intensely. But if not returning brought happiness to his heart, it would also bring happiness to our hearts. Okay, let's end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, the love of the residents of Vrindavan ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hare Om, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.